Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wild Horse and Burro Radio, an educational outreach program of Wild Horse Freedom Federation. I want to remind our listeners, if you have any questions and would like to call in halfway through the show, in about half an hour, you just dial 917-388-4520, then press 1. And Marty will let us know when you're on in hold, and we'll get to your question as soon as we can. Tonight, my guest is Carol Walker, the Director of Field Documentation for Wild Horse Freedom Federation, and she's one of my very favorite people in the world, and we're always talking about her pup Dante and his adventures. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you, Dad. Thank you so much for having me on.
Sure. We were going to kick off tonight. Before we get into the really serious stuff, we just wanted to briefly mention that our Wild Horse Freedom Federation 2017 calendars are available. If you go to the Wild Horse Freedom Federation website, this year they're featuring the McCullough Peaks herd. Beautiful pictures taken by Carol. And I think they're $14.95, Carol?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, so you can do your Christmas shopping early, everybody, and grab those, or whatever holiday, and grab some of those calendars. Carol, we get a lot of new listeners, so can you give us a little background history on the checkerboard areas, and maybe just before you even do that, explain to our new listeners what the checkerboard areas are in Wyoming with these wild horses?
Sure, absolutely, Deb. So the checkerboard was formed when the railroad was going through the country in the 1860s. And what the government did in order to raise funds to pay for the railroad was to divide up public and private lands and sell off private lands to finance the railroad. So these are 1 mile square blocks of public and private land that are in a 20-mile across corridor going through Wyoming. And unfortunately, three of the largest herd areas in the country, and certainly in Wyoming, have checkerboard areas in them. So there becomes an issue about having wild horses on private lands. Now, back in the 80s, Rock Springs Grazing Association, who actually has most of the private land in the checkerboard and leases the vast majority of the leases, the livestock grazing leases in the checkerboard, sat down with the BLM and a wild horse group. It was actually Karen Sussman was working with that. And they set a number of wild horses that would be allowed in the checkerboard because, as you can imagine, you can't fence off a 1 mile square. And and the area we're talking about is 2 million acres. So putting fencing across all of that is just impractical. So they said, okay, we're going to have this many horses allowed in the checkerboard. Now, RSGA, which is one of the most powerful grazing associations in the country, even though there's only 24 members, they started to get mad because the BLM, they thought, wasn't rounding up horses quickly enough and there were too many horses in the checkerboard. So, unfortunately, at the time, in 2010, the Deputy Interior Secretary, Sylvia Baca, advised the RSGA to file a lawsuit against the BLM as a way to get Congress to appropriate more funds for wild horse roundups. And they did.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So it came from the top. And so RSGA filed a lawsuit against BLM, and the BLM settled it, and they agreed to wipe out horses from the checkerboard.
Maybe she should have paid for that lawsuit since she advised it.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think so.
Like lobbying, like a government official lobbying for something. Yeah.
Right, right. And so even though well over half of the land in the checkerboard is public, and this is a violation of their own land use plans because they're bringing the population of the wild horses down below the appropriate management levels.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
The American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign and the Cloud Foundation and me and Kimberly Curl, who's another wildlife photographer, we challenged the BLM's decision to round up all the horses from the public and private lands of the Wyoming Checkerboard under its Wild Horse Act Section 4. So they basically said, well, we can round up all these horses because in Section 4 it allows us to remove horses from private land. But the problem is it's not just private land. And so actually, you know, they decided that they didn't need to prepare an environmental assessment, and so they were in violation of NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, which protects our environment. And it requires you to prepare an environmental assessment or environmental impact statement on the likelihood of the impacts of the various alternative actions. The BLM decided they didn't want to do that. So they just went ahead and said, oh, well, we have a categorical exclusion. We can just go around that. And actually, Judge Freudenthal actually held for us with NEPA and said that, no, you have to go back and prepare NEPA. However, we lost on the other two grounds. So on the Federal Lands Policy Management Act and the Wild Horse Act. So we appealed that decision, and we are going to be we're going to be participating in oral arguments in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver on September 19th. So
wow.
It tells you how slowly the law moves. That this was back in 2014, the first roundup, and now we're finally getting to the appeals court.
Yeah, but then also right now, that's our background. They're rounding up more horses, right?
So then what happened is they have now published an environmental assessment. Actually, they did prepare an environmental assessment this time because they got spanked last time. And the due date is for comments by the public is September 9th. And they are planning to round up 500 horses and remove them from Great Divide Basin, Adobe Town, and Salt Wells Creek, even though the last roundup was 2 years ago and they removed 1,261 horses from
wow.
these areas.
Yeah, they're just wiping them out. Also, this environmental assessment, isn't it missing a very important appendix, Appendix 5?
Yes, Appendix 5 actually is supposed to go over the livestock grazing impacts, and it's just missing. And I called the wild horse and burrow expert, Jay Deert, and I also emailed him, and I did not receive any sort of response. This EA is actually incomplete.
Yeah, it's missing a very important piece of information. And I think, for one thing, they should extend the public comment time to sometime after, you know.
After they print it.
Yeah.
What
available to the public.
Absolutely. One of the things about the environmental assessment that makes me laugh, because it's so stupid, is that there was a flyover that was done to do the population count in 2015. And the numbers were absolutely ridiculous, because back in after the roundup in October 2014, they said there were 519 horses in Adobe Town, 29 in Salt Wells Creek, and 91 in Great Divide Basin. Then in 2015, magically, there were 858 horses in Adobe Town. So this is like a jump of 330 horses in 1 year. Salt Wells Creek suddenly had 616 from 29.
From 29 to 600.
And then Great Divide Basin from 91 jumped to 579. So
wow.
Yeah, and they said that they could not provide pictures because of the concerns about air sickness. So the documentation is really inadequate.
Well, I keep stressing they could have a GoPro camera on there,
yes.
Stick it on their windows or the dashboard, so nobody would have to get air sickness. You know, A, they shouldn't be flying on a plane because they have to look down for counts anyhow. So
right.
How could they possibly, what's the difference between looking down to count and looking down to take a picture? So.
Well, now, and then it becomes even more absurd because the 2016 count is now available in the AA, and suddenly Adobe Town only has 684 horses. So somehow 200 disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And Saltwells Creek actually increased to 696, and Great Divide Basin also went down to 542 from 579.
We need to start getting independent flyovers on all these areas just to challenge. You know, I think that's the only way to challenge their skewed population estimates. And when we do it, get videotape, you know.
Yes. You know, and you know, they're doing this statistical double count method that, you know, it's just ridiculous. And as far as I know, also, they, in the past, and they may still be doing it, RSGA used to pay for the flyovers and have a member in the plane the people counting. So how accurate do you think these counts are?
Well,
I mean, it's ridiculous. I actually said, well, gee, you should have a wild horse advocate in there, too, if you're going to have RSGA. Well, you're not paying for it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. But
well, and you know, the fact that they're paying for it, you know, it seems corrupt right from the get-go. It's not
exactly.
Yeah, it's not unbiased. Yeah.
So, and you know, I've been to probably about 12 roundups now over the past 12 years. And this roundup in 2014 was one of the most brutal because their mandate was to get every horse in the checkerboard.
Mm-hmm.
They were unrelenting with these horses. They drove old horses that should never have even been rounded up over miles, you know, mares and foals, and there was this one area in this mine that they were trying to get these horses, and they spent 2 hours driving this one family with a helicopter again and again toward the trap. I was in tears. I was like wanting them to go in the trap because I wanted it to be over. I didn't want them to get injured. You know, they were sweating. They were exhausted. It was brutal. And in normal roundup, if the horses had given them that much trouble, they would have let them go. But no, they want to get every single horse. So this roundup is going to be very detrimental to the horses, more than normal. I mean, of course, you're driving wild horses using a helicopter, using fear to scare them into running. Okay, that is a bad situation from the get-go. But add it to this mandate to get every horse, and you have a real recipe for disaster. And as it was, there was a temporary holding pen that the horses went to right after they were rounded up, and many young horses especially broke their necks in the panels in this temporary holding facility.
Oh no.
And it was a very small area. Then they would be moved to Rock Springs or Canyon City. And actually, within a few months after the roundup, over 100 horses had died.
Mm-hmm.
And this in Canyon City and Rock Springs. And this wasn't even counting the foals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got there in February, at the end of February, the very first day that they allowed horses to be adopted. And the mare pen was so crowded that you could barely see the babies through the legs of the mares. And, you know, several babies died. I don't know exactly how many, but I know of at least one that did die because of the overcrowding of these pens. And so there are many other, you know, there are additional horses that have died besides the ones that were counted. And and then they get sent to long-term holding or other things, and they may end up at slaughter. So there is no good this is not a good solution for the wild horses involved in this. They lose their families, they lose their homes, they lose their lives, they get injured, they may end up at slaughter. This is a very terrible situation. And this is not being done because there's an overpopulation of wild horses. This is being done because there are a bunch of greedy ranchers who don't want to share what they consider to be their lands with any other with wild horses. So
didn't you tell me too that Rock Springs field manager? I think that's
yes. I was
going to
read that quote.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the Rock Springs field manager, Kimberly Foster, publicly stated in a, this was in an article. For all intents and purposes, we consider all of the checkerboard private.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Public lands, even the BLM considers public lands to be private.
To be private. Well, because it's easier to deal with it that way, right?
Yeah, you don't have any of us pesky wild horse advocates or environmentalists looking into things.
How about the people who use the lands for recreation? How about the people who go hunting on the lands? How about... You know, how about the other wildlife? You know, suddenly this is just owned by RSGA? I don't think so.
Well, I'm going to jump in here with a quick thing. I'm always telling people they should read this 20-page report. It was done in 2006, but it's still very relevant. It's on the Wild Earth Guardians website, and it's called Mortgaging Our National Heritage. And it's an analysis of the use of BLM grazing permits as collateral for private loans. So, and it was written by Taylor Jones, then with Forest Guardians, and Mark Salvo of the Sagebrush Seed Campaign. But what this is individual grazing permittees using BLM grazing permits for private bank loans. So they're using public land permits, which is a privilege, not a right, for private bank loans. And this is done with BLM and Forest Service complicity. So I encourage everyone to go read this 20-page report, Mortgaging Our Natural Heritage, at Wild Earth Guardians website. I think the more educated we all are on what's happening to our public lands, and we need to be, to stay on top of things. And there are even some connections. I believe one of the members, if not the president of the Rock Springs Grazing Association at one time was also owned the bank or was president of the bank or his family's got the bank there in Rock Springs. So I think it's important to look into all that.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you met any members of the Rock Springs Grazing Association at the roundups or anything, Carol?
Unfortunately, yes. The last day that I was there, I was there with Linda Hannick. 2014, October.
Mm-hmm.
I was there with Linda Hannick. We were in the observation area, which was 3 miles from the trap site.
Wow.
So we could barely see it through binoculars. Debbie Eversole of Eversole Ranch drove up the hill in a cloud of dust, jumped out of her vehicle, and started toward us yelling, "How dare we... make her not be able to be on her land and observe this." And she's shouting and yelling at Linda and I, who are standing there with the BLM people. And she went on haranguing about the horses and how they didn't belong there and her family was there first and on and on and on. And she scared me. She's a big lady. And I actually motioned the ranger over to get between us and her because she was very angry.
Well,
and
if any of us behaved in that threatening manner,
we would have been arrested.
We would
have been arrested and taken away.
Yeah.
So as it was, she was yelling and screaming, and apparently she thought that we had asked, the coutures to move her, but apparently it was the coutures that had to move her because she was in the way. So yes, that was my one and only encounter with a member of the Rock Springs Grazing Association. I can tell you, I do not want to repeat it.
Well, I'm encouraging. I hope. Well, first of all, I hope the BLM extends the public comment period on this EA since they're missing Appendix 5, which is very, the impacts of livestock grazing. I think that's extremely critical. And to leave out such an important part of an environmental assessment, they must extend the
right
public comment.
And as I said, I asked that they do that, and I did not hear anything back.
Well, if anybody's going to happen, I guess tomorrow's that National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board meeting. If any of our listeners are going to that, maybe somebody can bring this up.
Yes,
you
that
know,
would be a good thing to do.
They're doing incomplete EAs. Bring it up there. Ask for Appendix 5 if you're going there.
Yeah, and so there was something I wanted to explain about the checkerboard.
Mm-hmm.
So wild horses don't stay in one place. They move around. They go to water, they go to forage, sometimes they'll move quite a bit of distance. And when the winter comes, they want to be in the more temperate areas of the herd management area, which unfortunately are in the checkerboard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 2014, we were blamed. Our lawsuit was blamed for more horses getting rounded up because they said more horses went into the checkerboard the later it got. This was in middle of September, okay? Now, the roundup cannot start before 30 days after the decision record, which at the earliest could be issued October 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting quite a bit later. They are setting this up to get even more horses than the 500. You watch. They'll probably end up getting 700 or 800 horses, and there are not going to be very many horses left on any of these herd management areas. This is a recipe for getting rid of them. This is a recipe for getting rid of them.
Herds. Yeah. No. And just so our new listeners know, you need between, I think it's 130 and 150 breeding age adults, Dr. Gus Cochran has said, breeding age adults to have a viable herd. So, again, the BLM is violating its mandate for healthy herds by reducing them, even if it's in a land use plan. They're supposed to say, we need this many for a viable herd. And they're not doing that.
Actually, here, at this point, we're not getting into the not genetically viable. Not yet.
But you will be after this roundup.
But we will be after a while. Now, they are violating their land use plan. Because with this removal of 500 horses, if there's only 500, they are going to bring Great Divide Basin below the appropriate management level. And they are not supposed to do that. That is a violation of the Federal Land Planning Act. And so they need to wait until the resource management plan is amended and changed before they can do that. They're just going to go ahead and do it anyway. That's what they did in 2014.
Yeah, we're actually fighting for having resource management plans amended to bring the AML up to viable herd levels.
Well, what they're planning to do, they're planning to bring the AMLs down right now.
It may be shocking to some people that the AML can be as low as 10 wild horses or burros, and that's far from the minimum 130 adults needed for a viable herd. And our
aren't 70% of our herds below the number 130 to 150?
The BLM and all of their the AML, when you look at their statistics on their website, you can go look at their statistics, their annual statistics. And if you look at each of the herd management areas, 75% of them, about approximately 75%, the levels that they allow are way below what's needed for a viable herd.
So
and
basically
some of them
they're
are like 10 to 20, you know?
Yeah, so basically they're, and then they'll say, well, it's below the level for genetic viability. We're just going to zero it out.
Yeah.
We're just going to zero it out.
Well,
Deb, one thing I wanted to bring up before we start taking callers is what people can do who are listening.
Yeah, great.
So so I'm encouraging everyone to send comments to the BLM on this. If you look on my website, wildhoofbeats.com, my blog actually gives you where you can comment, you know, where you can email your comments and some suggestions. options of things you might bring up, and that we want alternative one, which is no removal of wild horses. And so it's very important to comment, and it's very important to use your own words. I know that American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign has a letter that you can sign on to, but the BLM tends to count those as one. So all of those
only comments. One letter. Yeah.
Only one
yeah.
letter. So go ahead and do that for American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign, but send in your own comments and your own words in addition. That's what's really going to count. That's what they're going to analyze. That's what they're going to have to address is your comments. So I say that that's a very, very important. The other thing you can do to support is to support the lawsuit. You can, you know, it's very important to get behind legal action because sometimes, and more this is the case, the only recourse we have is to fight in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible because it shouldn't have to be that way, but right now it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know people get concerned and they say, well, it seems like we're not getting anywhere. But I tell you, if we didn't have all the people that were interested and involved and caring about the horses, writing letters, supporting lawsuits, doing all that they do, we wouldn't have any horses left now. So
mm-hmm.
it is making a difference.
I believe that.
It is not, it may not be, the situation may not be where we want it to go right now, but we have made progress, and the awareness of the wild horse issue has really spread in this country, and people are getting more and more involved, which I think is fantastic. So,
and I know, I can tell that the wild horse advocates seem more knowledgeable now, even if they're just starting out, getting interested in this subject,
mm-hmm,
they're catching on a lot more quickly, and
mm-hmm.
You know, so their knowledge is continuing on a higher level, and I think you know, we're making progress, as
yes,
bad
we
are. As it seems now.
You know, and I think, and last time in 2014, I made a point of trying to get pictures out of the horses that had been captured, and a lot of people were very interested, and a lot of people did adopt, you know, older horses. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's
mm-hmm.
wonderful, but they need to stay out. They need to stay in their homes.
Yeah.
We
on
don't need them
land.
In holding facilities. We don't need them adopted. We need them to stay free. That's what we
land.
Need.
In
on
family
public land.
Bands. Yeah,
in their
families.
Homes. In
yeah.
their homes. This is the best solution for the horses. It's the best solution for the taxpayer, us. You know, it's the best solution all around, except for RSGA. Yes. And, you know, I believe very firmly that what we need to do in all of the horse areas is manage the wild horses as the principal species in the area, as is mandated by the Wild Horse and Burro Act.
Mm-hmm.
That's what needs to happen. We need to retire and get rid of these grazing leases in wild horse herd management areas.
Especially in public or in Wyoming, there's a lot of oil production on a lot
yes.
of these herd management areas. And,
yes.
and you know, these herd management areas were meant to be the federally protected, or the herd areas were supposed to be the federally protected areas for the wild horses. And then the BLM, you know, made subsets of that called the herd management areas. So they've been whittling away acres, whittling away the number of horses. When I look at maps of the Wyoming oil and gas leases, it's all over the herd management areas. So not only is it grazing, it's oil and gas production there in Wyoming.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the horses are just being run off their federally protected areas that were meant primarily for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I just want to quickly let our listeners know that if you want to call in and ask Carol any questions, you can call area code 917-388-4520 and press 1. One thing I wanted to bring up too, Carol, all of these environmental assessments right now, you know, our listeners are going to be hearing about, oh, they're going to round up horses here, they're going to round up horses there. Well, ever since 2013, the BLM started omitting important information from their range land inventory monitoring and evaluation reports, which are called RIME reports, R-I-M-E reports. So starting back in 2013, they started omitting things including the grazing allotments failing rangeland health standards. So basically they're turning a blind eye to the impacts of livestock grazing, and the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, PEER, if people go to PEER.org, P-E-E.org, there's a couple of reports. One's called BLM Dumbing Down Reports on Livestock Range Conditions. And you can read what the BLM's been doing. PEER filed a complaint with the Assistant Director of BLM's Information Resource Management for them violating the Data Quality Act, because they're deceiving Congress, they're deceiving the American public. And basically, even by leaving out Appendix 5 out of this environmental assessment, they're deceiving the public on,
yeah,
on the effects of livestock grazing. And it's not just an accident here or there. I think it's a, you know, it's a they're mismanaging our public lands.
Yes, absolutely.
And favoring certain uses over other uses. And,
yeah. Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Well,
and yeah.
Well, worst case scenario, I mean, I'm hoping people call the Rock Springs Grazing Field Office and complain that there wasn't an Appendix 5, and tell them to post it, and then extend the public comment period. That's one thing we're going to push for. Worst case scenario, if there are roundups, we're going to do another radio show, and we will encourage everyone to go to those roundups. I think that this cannot be swept under a rug. These horrible, you know, like Carol said, it's probably more brutal than the last one. So I think it's very important that people are there to witness this. And we'll certainly have a radio show. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that, but if it does, we will be encouraging people to go to the roundups, and we will be reporting on it.
Oh, and Deb, I forgot to say one other reason this was so was rather brutal was because the horses have been rounded up so many times in the last few years that they've gotten smart, and they try to avoid the helicopter and the traps, which all it does is extend the amount of time that they're being run by the helicopter. And I saw this over and over again. The horses would dodge the trap. They'd be run again and again. And this is where you have mares separated from foals. You have foals with broken legs. You have older horses that can't keep up. You know, you have all these terrible things because the horses, after a while, they're like, oh, my God, we're being rounded up again. So they're getting smarter about it. The whole thing is absurd.
Everything's absurd about this program. And I don't know if a lot of our new listeners realize, but when the BLM, they'll chase these wild horses or burros for miles by helicopter. Some people have even, I think Carl Morozak got footage of them putting the skids on a burro and flipping it, the helicopter skids. But they chase these animals by helicopter, and then the older ones, or they'll say, oh, they had club feet or something, or they're blind in one eye, and then they euthanize them once they get in the trap site. They were able to run all that way being chased by a helicopter, and then only to be euthanized with the BLM, like, oh, their teeth are bad, or, oh, they have club feet, or, oh, you know. And who knows, some of the injuries may have been caused by, you know, when they say they're injured, they may have been injured from the helicopter chasing them. But if they were strong enough to survive running, I don't think they should be euthanized at the trap site. The BLM is just using any excuse they can to get rid of them.
Well, and there was also at this roundup, there was a foal that I watched be chased for 45 minutes. It had fallen behind and lost its mother, and they kept chasing it with the helicopter, and you could tell through the binoculars that it was absolutely terrified, and it didn't know what to do. And so finally a cowboy rode out there and roped it, which is this, you know, this little foal has no idea what's going on. It's being chased by the helicopter. It's terrified. It's exhausted after 45 minutes. and then someone goes and throws a rope around it. It has no idea what to do, gets dragged around, and finally
aren't
loaded into a trailer.
Aren't their necks very fragile? Aren't their necks pretty
poles
fragile?
Poles are very fragile. You know, I mean, the whole, you know, it's horrible to watch. It is horrible because I'm sitting there and I'm absolutely powerless to do anything. If I step a foot wrong, you know, the BLM can call the ranger over and have me arrested. So I have to just stand there.
I'm and, like a member of the Rock Springs Grazing Association that can go off on a rant.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and we will not every day, but the days that we are allowed, we can go and see the horses after they've been rounded up, and they march us around and very quickly, so we can barely see the horses through the mesh on the fence, and answer a few questions, and then we have to go, and that's it. And we, you know, there's really, being 3 miles away from the trap, I can't tell the condition of the horses when they come in. I can't tell if they're breathing hard unless they run right by me.
I think we have a caller calling in with a question. Marty, is someone on the line?
Yes, area code 530. You're live and on the air.
Hello. Do you have a question?
Hi, hello. Yeah, I guess that would be me. Okay. You know, if it wasn't for the people that are willing to witness the brutality and the ugliness of these roundups, the rest of us wouldn't know. And it's not for the weak of spirit. And so there's not enough thank yous for the people that do go and photograph and endure, like Carol said, and not being able to do anything. But I was wondering, have any of the federal contractors ever been, any lawsuits ever filed against them?
No, because they're actually being hired by the BLM to do this. I mean, there really wouldn't be any point to sue the couture's. You know, really, it's the BLM who's in charge, ostensibly, and they're
independent
contractors.
On the Animal Legal Defense Fund, I see a whole page full of lawsuits against the agencies and or universities for the hiring of such contractors that caused the cruelty. Well, I'm kind of scanning this kind of quick, so I'd have to.
Carol, yeah, as a contractor, they have to follow the law. You cannot contract knowing you're violating the law. So there should be something maybe that people could look into.
Yeah.
There were a couple things.
And it might be
it
might be an angle that somebody might be able to bring a suit, but it hasn't been done yet.
Hasn't been done. Okay. The next thing you were talking about, I was trying to gather up some material to just add to the conversation. You were talking about the banks and the holding the collateral on the public lands. Well, I looked up the Rock Springs Bank, and on the board of directors, there's John W. Hay III is chairman. There's a Keith N. Hay, and then there's a John E. Hay, secretary. So I don't know if that's the same Hayes, but...
Oh, yes, it's the same Hayes.
I think John W. Hay was president of the Rock Springs Grazing Association for a while, wasn't he, Carol? Yeah.
Yes.
And I do believe there's wind energy projects going up there. And then there was also a report written on RT's site, and Grandma Greg posted it, in the tar sands oil shale Richfield study that it landed in... four states, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, okay, three states. And every place where they're the tar sands, and they did say that it would not be compatible, then it would not be compatible with, were they to find oil, I believe, and go in for the exploration, it would not be compatible with herd management areas that were intersecting with the oil fields that they would look to explore or extract. And those herd areas in Wyoming, it was Little Colorado, White Mountain, Salt Wells, Adobe Town. And then there, every place where the tar sands oil shale study was, horses have been rounded up. So I don't know if it's oil, if it's wind energy, not sure just what all, or all of the above. So,
yeah. The horses are getting squeezed either way. It's mm-hmm. from all directions right now.
Oh, it certainly is. And it seems as though there's just a big red-hot hurry to get them off of there, like right now, for some reason. It's almost like this last ditch, because we're seeing it's coming in from all over.
Yes.
The burros are getting removed in Arizona, the horses in Colorado, the horses in Wyoming, and, I mean, it's just bang, 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 one roundup scheduled right after the other. So I don't
even
know.
Even when they're saying long-term holding is full. You know, they're still demanding more roundups. Yes, exactly.
Precisely. I guess that's about all I had to add. I mean, there's so much more, but and we're all working on it furiously,
yes.
trying to do everything we can. And, we send in our comments. And
yes.
People
Thank
are.
Thank you so much for doing that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And we're
it's
calling.
Important.
We're calling.
Yeah.
And is it true that a phone call is worth a phone call has a little bit more swag
yes.
behind it than
Absolutely.
An email. That
yes.
is when they will answer their phones, because I do believe the field manager there is new. Didn't they just do
yes.
a switch again?
Yes. Yes.
They're moving them around a great deal too.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And I find often, because I do call, all I get is the answering machine, no matter where I call. So that is very
well,
hard
if you call,
to get
if you call the Rock Springs office, they actually have people working at the switchboard. So you'll get a real person initially, at least, when you call in.
And then do they log that call if you
I don't
tell
know.
Them what
I don't know. But you
okay.
can often get through to, you know, whoever you're asking. I can usually get through in Rock Springs, but you're right. I mean, you may just get put off or put on a voicemail or something.
They're always out of the office, it seems. and then, well, I know one thing, the calls to the president, if you call the White House every day, which I did for a very long time, you do, I don't know if he actually sees those messages. They say they do. But you will get a real person there at call the
yes.
White House. Call everybody you can think
yes.
of. Call the newspaper, call everybody. So everybody I know is just absolutely livid over this. What those animals are put through is, well, we all know what the word for it is, but we're all supposed to be nice. And I don't know how many people are following what's happening in North Dakota with the Sioux tribe up there, the Standing Rock tribe.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, the whole nation is behind them right now. They're actually going in and the oil company that was going to run the pipeline, as I understand it, across the Missouri River twice, an oil company that has a very, very bad reputation for oil spills, oil leaks, without consulting the tribe, the tribal leader said that they don't consider a notice that, well, I'm just paraphrasing here. He says it much, much better than I do. If you watch on Democracy Now, you can see the actual interview. But just being told, like we're told, that they're going to do it anyway, they don't consider that being consulted, and they want a full environmental impact statement. And people are coming from all over the country to back them up, and they're getting attention. And the, mm-hmm. over the weekend, the oil company actually sent in the guards for their company with dogs, with attack dogs. And when they started digging up with the bulldozers their ancestral burial sites, the people, without, they're not armed, they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. There's no liquor, there's no violence whatsoever. They just started going through the fence to, they're going to get in front of the bulldozers, and those guards put the dogs on them. And if you don't
oh,
think
dear.
That has
no.
angered people, so
mm-hmm.
the people right now in this country are in no mood for this kind of Gestapo tactics. So, you know, we're fighting back as we can. Anyway, with that, I will get off the phone. And
thank
so
you so much for calling.
Thanks. Well, it's true, Carol, the industrialization of the West, which, you know, Ken Salazar started that term, the industrialization of the West, I think people on both parties are tired of seeing special interests and corporations run our government agencies, and that's certainly what we see on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And the the BLM seems to have no oversight. They seem, they get to just do whatever they please. And,
well, and as part of it, it's difficult, as you know, because we've got Wild Horse Freedom Federation has three lawsuits filed because we can't get Freedom of Information Act requests. I have several appeals in, and they just don't respond. They're supposed to give you a decision within, I think, 10 days or something. It took me 2 years one time to get, it was over two pages that I felt were overzealously redacted, and I filed an appeal. It took 2 years. And, most people don't have money to file lawsuits these days. And we decided on principle, because if somebody doesn't start standing up for our constitutional rights or whatever, you have to take a stand and do it. But there's so little transparency, and we need it to actually be a good watchdog and try and figure out, analyze the BLM's actions, this government agency's actions. So we need the information. So that we don't have to guess or assume. We're trying to look at the facts and analyze them. So,
we're trying to protect our wild horses, which should be the job of the BLM. But it's like the fox guarding the hen house. So it's up to us, American citizens, to protect the wild horses in whatever way we possibly can, against the BLM. It's all backwards.
Yeah, and for a lot of our new listeners, tomorrow and the next day, they're having these National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board meetings. It's in Elko, Nevada, I believe.
Yes.
Tomorrow and the next day. Unfortunately, this advisory panel is stacked with livestock grazing special interests.
Yes.
And they hate wild horses, most of them.
And most of them are pro-slaughter, yes.
Yeah, pro-horse slaughter. They hate the wild horses. They talk about sterilizing them, how to get rid of them. If you go to, probably tomorrow we'll run a link so people can watch this live.
Yes, you can watch it live if you can stomach it.
They stream it. Yeah, if you can stomach it. And basically, a lot of the major wild horse and burro advocacy groups just don't even bother to go anymore because they only allow a 3-minute comment per person if you get
at
that.
At the end.
At the end. You only get 3 minutes. You travel all this way on your own money. You pay for your transportation, a hotel, food, and then you can only talk for 3 minutes. And they set it up that way. They could easily extend this to an additional half day and give people a longer comment period. They seem to pick areas like Elko where there are a lot of ranching interests so that a lot of ranchers will show up to support them.
Ranching interests and also hard to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
Elko is not a major destination.
Salt Lake City or Reno and then drive there.
Just like when they had it in Riverton in Wyoming, which is very hard to get to. Instead of, it was originally going to be in Cheyenne. let's put it in the middle of the state where it's hard to get to.
And they really don't, you can't get there. And they try and tell you, if you look in the Federal Register, that you can only comment on things of the on the agenda. And I always say, people died so we have the right for free speech, and you can talk about anything you want when it's your 3 minutes. You don't have to stick with their agenda or what they want. We still have free speech in this country so far, and you have a right to say whatever you want to say on your 3 minutes. But just making a point, most of the major advocacy groups are stopping going because it's such a farce and a dog and pony show. Nobody wants to. We feel like our efforts are best spent elsewhere, trying to actually save the wild horses and burros.
Right.
I mean, I'm glad when people do show up. I'm glad they speak up for the horses. But more and more, I'm hearing people just like we think it might be more important in case we need to go to those roundups.
than via this meeting. So
we'll
link to the live stream tomorrow. So if people want to watch it, you can go on RT's blog straight from the horse's heart. And are you going to put it on your blog, Carol, or should it just straight from the horse's heart?
I'll put it on my Facebook pages so people can find it.
Yeah. I think we have another caller calling in. Hello?
Area code 954, you're live and on the air.
I just have a quick question. I'm not sure if I have the number to the Rock Springs BLM office. In case I don't, could that be posted or all that?
Sure.
The contact information?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, as far as calling the White House, which I've done before, I guess just a general statement about being opposed to the roundups in general. I mean, I would guess you wouldn't want to get too specific with them. They're not really.
Oh, sure, you could get specific. Absolutely, get specific.
Oh, okay.
And let me give you the field office number right now. This is the BLM Wyoming Rock Springs field office main number. Okay?
Okay.
This is 307
352
0256.
0256.
And Kimberly Foster is the field manager. She's the one who said the checkerboard areas is for all intents and purposes, we consider all of the checkerboard private.
Yeah. Okay.
You might want to give her a little piece of your mind.
Yeah.
I let her know that you consider public lands public, belonging to all Americans, not a few.
Right.
Yes, and we don't want the BLM giving our public lands away.
Right. Yeah, that's what I emphasize whenever I call a writer or whatever. And also I wanted to ask, is an email just as effective as a letter?
Yes, as far as your comments, yeah. A letter, an email, either one is good.
Okay.
What I'm encouraging everybody, use your own words. Send your own email directly to the BLM. That's what you want to do.
Can I interject something here? If this is Marty, if you send an email or a snail mail, they discard it, claim they never got it. You can't prove whether they did or they didn't. You need to send a fax. Always use a fax because it has to be kept on record for 7 years and available for public viewing. They have got to keep a record of it. When they tell people to email in, they discard that. I guarantee you, they discard that. They never got it. And the same thing with snail mail.
Well, in response to that comment, Marty, the fax number for the BLM Rock Springs field office is 307-352-0329.
Yay.
So anybody wants to send a fax.
Yeah.
And the comments are due September 9th.
Right.
So that's Friday. So you want to get your comments in by 4 p.m. Mountain Time.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for calling in. Well, Carol, we're on about the last 6 minutes of the show.
Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to emphasize or bring up again or anything you may have forgotten?
Let's see. Oh, yes. So if the BLM is allowed to go ahead and round up horses on the checkerboard, saying they're removing them from public and private lands, just because there's complaints about the horses on private lands, this is going to have a terrible precedent for all of our herd areas. There are checkerboards in Utah and Nevada, and this is going to set a terrible precedent. This is not just about the Wyoming checkerboard. This is about our wild horses being removed from public lands because of concern about private lands. This is not okay. This needs to be stopped here instead of being allowed to go on.
I think Deb fell off the board.
Did Deb fall off the board?
She did, Carol.
Okay,
she
that's
fell
fine.
Off the board.
And then the other thing is, there has been massive public outcry against this and against the Roundup in 2014, and we are not being listened to. So this is just completely unacceptable. And it's very important that people continue to call and write and email and comment about what's going on right now.
Okay. Deb, you back on? Apparently not. Poor Deb.
Okay.
I tried to get her back up. Well, we're down to 3 minutes here. Carol, is there anything,
okay,
any final, any information you want to give, any contact information, website information?
Sure, absolutely. So we will be keeping you updated about what's going on with the checkerboard roundup. As I said, the comments are due Friday, and then there will be a decision record issued. And what that will be is the BLM will say what they're going to do. And they will lay that out, and then we will have another 30 days to comment before they can start rounding up.
I'm back
so
on. I got kicked off. Sorry.
You're back on. Yay. So I was telling people what was going on. So we'll be updating everybody. I will continue posting blogs on wildhoofbeats.com. We will continue updating you on Straight from the Horse's Heart. And so just
and Wild Horse Freedom Federation website.
And wildhorsefreedomfederation.org. So we'll be continuing to update and let you know how things are going. And also, I will definitely be updating you on how our oral arguments on September 19th in front of the 10th District Court goes, which I'm very excited to be able to attend. So
yeah. And we'll be having you back on the radio again, Carol, as you know. I appreciate all the hard work you're doing out there. I know how much time you spend doing it, and the horses need you. They need all of us, and I'm encouraging everyone that's listening to take action. They need your voices.
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
We've got about 2 minutes here. So we'll update everyone. Next week we're going to have Susan Wagner of Equine Advocates on, and I think maybe John Holland of Equine Welfare Alliance. We're going to be updating people on the horse slaughter issue. I'd like to encourage people. There's a show on Tuesday nights called Voices Carry for Animals, hosted by Debbie Dahmer. And Debbie's been great about getting the Wild Horse and Burro issue out to all the animal groups. So we hope people listen to her show on Tuesday nights. Thursday nights, my producer Marty does a show called Whistleblowers on TS Radio. And thank you, Marty, for producing our show and for hopping in for me when I get kicked off the air.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you, Carol. And thank you to all our listeners. And thanks for trying to learn more about the wild horses and burros and for being their voice. Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening. And we'll be back on next week.
Okay,
good night.
Good night.